Hey, hey, it's Brie Bagwell with your Only Vans Recap, and from Atlanta, Georgia, this real deal husband and wife team, Kira and Elise and Willie Heath Neal, are just two darling human beings joining me today who formed the duo, the Waymores. Today, we sit in the RV and talk about how they fell in love, how they ride together, what it's like being best friends and music partners. You know, I love a road warrior, and these two are two of the hardest working musicians I know when it comes to the highway. They have dates coming up in D.C., Tennessee, Ohio, Texas. They've played all over and even overseas. So head to thewaymores.com for tour dates. The Knot is their newest album, which came out February 26, 2026. It's very Johnny and June vibes and witty and honest and real. And you're going to love it. Okay, enjoy. Hey y'all, it's Brie Bagwell. I want to invite you to join me August 12th through 16th in Red River, New Mexico for 8750 Music Festival. This boutique festival features 4 days and four nights of outstanding musical performances across five venues and includes a barbecue cook-off and a red and a green chili cook-off. 3 day passes are on sale now, and your ticket gets you into every show of the festival and includes two free meals. You can get tickets, sign up to compete in the cook-off, and learn more at 8750festival.com. That's 8750festival.com. And use coupon OnlyVans, that's OnlyVans, all caps, no space at checkout, to get $10 off your 3 day pass. 8750 Festival, adjust your altitude. By the way, me and producer Kyle, we're both playing at the festival, so you can come see us there.
Yeah. Like, Willie, you know, calls it urban yodeling.
I call it urban
that's
yodeling.
That's amazing.
Yeah. When What Changed My Life, we recorded with Shel Taomi on our album before this. I don't know if you don't know, people listening don't know who Shel Taomi is. He's a he's an American producer that went to England. He was part of the British invasion. He discovered the Kinks and the Who, and you know, he's David Bowie's
right.
One of his first managers, and he just passed away last year.
Mm-hmm.
But,
oh no!
But he never made a country record.
Hey, hey, everybody, this is Brie Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends in my van.
I wear a hat because it just covers my forehead wrinkles.
Oh my God.
You don't have to worry about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I had some struggles with that when they had to shave my head. I was like, oh, at least it brings out all of the wrinkles on my forehead. How great for me.
How great for me. I know, saw pictures of you. Yes. But you look so cute.
Yeah, that was a great thing. Is you know, it's like I was going to love her either way, but I was like, they shaved her head, and I was like, you still hot. You still look great with no hair.
That's what you want out of your husband.
That,
you
know,
like, think you're hot, with a good shaved
news.
Head.
Good news, baby, you're still hot.
I love that.
Thank God.
That's what Paul, he'll say, he says still hot too sometimes, which is very sweet, because right now I have on medical grade compression stockings.
Amazing.
And you would think, like, you know, stockings. No. These are like hideous.
No, I've seen them. I've worn them. I've been there.
Yeah, yes. And he's like still hot. Like, yeah. We got good men. We got lucky.
We do.
Wait, so you're touring in that a van? That's what you're touring
in?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What do you
see the big dance? Oh, we're not allowed to talk about that because we're still
it's
litigation.
Fine. So we've got it's a 16-passenger Ford E350, whatever.
Yeah, the touring beast.
A year and a half ago, we got hit out in
Waxahachie.
And it's still in litigation. Not our fault. We're great drivers. Yeah. By we, I mean Willie, because never drive.
Yeah, it was, we're really not supposed to talk about it.
That's so funny. Okay, well, we can always bleep it out.
Our lawyer was like, you're not allowed to post about it, talk about it, so we really can't talk about it.
I call them, I put in a song, you know, scratches and dents are just highway souvenirs.
Yeah.
Like, that's what, and then now anytime the band hits anything or breaks anything, they're like, it's a highway souvenir. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Not when you do it. Yeah. Not when I do it.
Ours would be a souvenir shop at this point.
Oh, that's
it could be an entire store if that's the rule.
I'm glad you're okay.
Thank you.
But, you know, the biggest part of that was because Kira was fresh out of brain surgery. So, you know, we got jostled pretty hard, and, you know, she has to go. Anytime, if she fell or anything, she has to go get checked out.
Only for 2 years. We're a year out from the final surgery now. So 2 years after the final surgery. I'd have to go get checked if any bump or bruise or anything happens.
Right.
Just to make sure nothing gets jostled in there.
I know. I was wondering if you were going to want to talk about it or if you
We had to be so public with it because our fans and friends and family all helped.
Right.
It's a $400,000 surgery.
Oh, that's all?
Each side is $200,000.
That's insane.
Yeah. Even with insurance, it didn't.
Insurance covered a lot of it. And I was paying an ungodly amount for insurance at the time. But I still think we paid close to $40,000 out of pocket.
Out of pocket.
And all of our fans, that was all them. I think from our actual pockets, it was probably like $20,000 or $15,000.
Yeah, we weren't even going to, you know, that thought never even came to us. We're not those people. It all started GoFundMe. Our publicist started a GoFundMe.
Well, and because I asked her for work. I was like, can I work for you doing publicist stuff while I have the surgery while I'm recovering? And she's like, no, girl, recover. Yeah. Like, focus on your recovery.
That's so beautiful.
I'm going to do this. Yeah, and thank God for her. So,
and I went and worked some construction and some stuff, too, which is, you know, if we're not working on the farm, when we're not on tour, our family has a farm that we have to, and they're kind of, you know, getting up in years, so they can't handle everything on their own. So we go down and we're farmhands mostly now when we're not on tour.
I know. I saw a video of you guys on the farm, and you said because animals are better than people. And I was like, me and these, we're going to get along just fine.
Always better than
where
people.
Where is that farm at, though?
It's in Middle Georgia. It's about 50 miles south of Macon.
And it's about 200 miles from Savannah. It's on I-16. Yeah. It's called Dexter, Georgia.
Cool.
Yeah, right.
There's not
Dublin.
Even a stoplight. Or a grocery store. There's a Dollar General, and we were thrilled when that happened.
Yeah.
So they call it the Dexter Mall.
The Dexter is just a Dollar General. Yeah. So you got to go into the next big town, which is Dublin, Georgia, which is only like, you know, 15-minute drive. You got to go into the town to get groceries and see the big city.
That is so fun. I bet that's a perfect place to recharge because you guys are on the road so much. I look at your schedule and that's why I was like, what are you touring in? Because that's got to be a workhorse, which, by the way, they don't make those fans anymore.
They're not. And they are.
So when
we got that one, man, we searched and searched. Our thing when we got it was like it had to have less than 100,000 miles on it, man. And it was, that's why we were so aggravated about the situation, because we had not had it. We had it less than a year, and it was, it still runs fantastic. It just looks like hell. But everybody wants those vans. We have friends that tore in those things, got over 500,000 miles on them. You
know, I went through two of them, and then I was going to get a third one, and I just couldn't find one, really.
Yeah.
And so I got a Sprinter van, and it almost bankrupted my company.
So we had said we're either going to get a Sprinter or one of those, and we took our band out on a run in the Sprinter, a rental. It was a Transit.
Yeah.
And so, same thing. And they were all like, we hate these because it didn't have the benches. It was all like the castle.
You can't sleep in them.
Yeah.
So we're like, we hate this. You have to get them.
So I love driving. I do all the driving. We came back and I was like, ooh, this has been fun to drive. And so we get in from the tour and I asked everybody, I was like, what did y'all think? And they go, we hate it back here. I was like, oh.
And thank God, because they are crazy expensive.
Yeah. But those, you know, those vans are great. If Kira and I, you know, sometimes you got to do a drive out after a show, you know, to make in a, it's, you know, you can just pull over, jump in a bench, grab an hour or two sleep, and get back at it,
you know.
And we do everything we can to not pull a trailer just because, man, you get into Chicago, man, the last thing you want to be doing is, I don't want to pull a trailer in downtown Austin.
That's actually much to the dismay of me and our lead player.
We
beg him to get a trailer all the time.
Like, no,
and he's like, first, no, it's not happening.
One, it's advertising that you're a band, basically, you know.
Very true.
Yeah.
But we toured one time with like a 7-piece band, including us, and we managed to get everybody, because we took the two back benches out for gear. We managed to get everybody and all the gear in that van without, I'm like, no trailer.
That's so smart. I think that's what killed my Sprinter was they're not necessarily made to tow. And then the engines and transmissions that I lost on the other vans was all from pulling a trailer, I'm sure. So good for you. And I think that it's so much smarter when you start, you're like, we need all this stuff. And then the older you get, the more you go on the road, you're like, I would like less things.
Oh, that's
stop telling him that, Brie.
Yeah, less things to pay for. Oh, sorry.
She's right.
Yeah.
And the other thing about it is, you know, man, we're a country band. We don't need big gear.
No, we
make the drummer, usually we tell our drummers whenever we got a couple guys we use, like, man, we need kick, snare, hi-hat, and ride. That's it. I don't need it. Every day, if we don't have a lot of merch, because that's important first, all the merch goes here if we get all the gear. You know, it's like, well, maybe every now and then we let them bring like a floor tom, but most is like, man, we need kick, snare, hi hat, and ride.
But we at this point, I think we need a trailer for like all of my dresses, and boots and hats.
That is the thing about. I mean, I got this thing for my dog so she could travel with me, but it is when I go on the road, even though if I'm going for one night, I get so frustrated because I'm so good at traveling. But it's like I literally my boots, my belt, my jewelry and my hat and my hair stuff and my makeup stuff. That's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot.
And I want to be I want to be minimalist, but it's literally impossible.
I try my best, especially on like one offs or weekends. I'm pretty good about that. But then if it's like longer than a week. Even clothes I haven't worn in a year, I'm like, oh, but I might. I should bring it just in case.
I get on stage in the same boots I work the farm in. And I'll take two pearl snaps and a Stetson, and I'm good to go.
I need several different hats because what if?
What if?
And a bunch of different dresses.
That's exactly right.
Paul just depends on how I'm feeling.
He gets under my skin, and he does it all the time on purpose because he'll say, okay, I have to get ready for my show, and he'll take off his baseball cap, and then he'll put on his cowboy hat, and he goes, okay, I'm ready. I mean, he wears the same jeans for 2 weeks on the road. I mean, it's insane.
I've had these jeans on since we left.
Rude.
And it looks cool. And it looks so cool rude. And fine. Yeah, rude. I know. I know. But you guys are okay. So I'm really bad about sometimes saying like who we even have here. So the Waymores are here with us now that we're ten minutes in.
Ten minutes in. I shouldn't have said all that weird shit.
Yeah, no, it's great. Oh, we got to start over. But I'm so glad y'all are here. But you are married, and so I know I get to play with my significant other, and it is the most fun being on the road with your person is so fun.
It is.
And I love that you guys get to tour the world together. And it seems from what I've just watched from your Instagram and your documentary and stuff is you love being on the road together.
That's it.
We do.
It's music is a means to travel. You know, we love music, but it's like if we didn't have the ability to play music, then we would be in some other profession that made us travel because I just cannot sit still.
It's a shame that we weren't born like millionaires because we'd be so good at it. We're so good at just spending money and traveling.
She knows how to spend money. Amazing. I know how to drive.
You know how to drive me to the places I spend money in. Mm-hmm. But it is really fun. And I think that we both, Willie more so than me, because I didn't really play music when I met Willie. But it was always one of his goals to have a partner that he traveled with and played music with and just thought that it would be great. So I was like, that's who I'm going to be. And now we do that.
Yeah, when Kira and I met, I was about 15 years into a solo career, you know. And like the first year that we met, I was on the road like 200 days that year. So it was like we barely. And then her career started. We met in this ensemble in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was a big opera style thing. I played bass too, so I'd play bass in this thing, and then I'd sing some. And everybody, you know, everybody would take turns singing. It wasn't just like one front person, but it was a corporate thing. And they had a residency in a bar there in Marietta, Georgia. And when I started doing it with them, I had a little bit of a name, and they were like, "Would you be a part of this full time?" And I was like, "Yeah." They're like, "You bring in a level of legitimacy to it. Would you?" I said, yeah, they had a female singer, and that girl was a train wreck. And I said, yeah, man.
It wasn't me.
It was Bree Bagwell.
It was actually Bree Bagwell.
It was you. But the girl would just like she couldn't sing to begin with. And, you know, she thought because she could belt out a Janis Joplin song that was singing. And I was like, and so she was just a buffoon. And I said, well, I can't. That girl's got to go. And they, well, we've got another girl in mind that we want to get. Kira was East Cobb famous is what we call it.
And, don't ever say that again.
But they're like, we got this other girl that we want to bring in to be the female vocal. And it was Kira. And so that's how we met, was in this big like corporate ensemble. You know, it had fiddle, it had mandolin, it had, you know, drums, keyboard. Her brother actually played keys in it. And that's where we met. And that's and then she started. I still had my solo career, and she started her career. And, you know, it was always a struggle, you know. It's like, man, I'm trying to make child support and pay. It's like, I can't, you know. And so we started doing the Waymores as we didn't want to oversaturate our names. But we were looking for a way to play in town, like bar gigs. And I had a record label saying, you can't be doing that crap with your name oversaturating.
Right.
You know, so we started calling it the Waymores just to not oversaturate our names. And it wound up, we made a little video of us doing John Prine and Iris DeMent song.
Oh yeah,
and it got traction. Yeah. And it was a show like HGTV.
It was HGTV. Yeah,
they were having
one of those
they
fixer
were having
uppers.
A reveal party. Oh my gosh! Out in Arizona.
It's like where they redo your house, uh-huh. and then they uh-huh. have like the big reveal.
They weren't filming it for the show. It was just they were having a party to celebrate it, and the people that whose home it was had asked us to come out to Arizona and play this party. And we were like, this was 2018. We were like, okay, just off that little video. So we booked a little tour. It wasn't, you know, it's like little bars and patios all the way out there. But we went out there, toured, and didn't even have a record, just that little video, you know. And we just never stopped touring. We came back from that run and made an album. We're like, well, we're going to need a record.
I think we did a few, and then people started asking us for an album, and we were like,
actually did an EP. We wrote five songs that we had, and on the vinyl, we have just some old tracks from mm-hmm. some stuff that we had done, but that's how it started. We never thought the Waymores were going to be anything but a patio band.
That's how the best things start. And then just kind of the vibe that I got was that you kind of made her sing a little bit more than she was like.
Well, I was singing with my brother's band before I met Willie, but I never played an instrument or anything. I actually had a huge crush on Willie. Like it was the second time I met him. The first time I hated him, but the second time I met him, I really was like, oh my God. And so I learned how to play guitar to flirt with him. And I learned three chords and wrote a song like a night later. And then I brought it to him the next week. And I was like, hey, we should play this. Like, I mean, I don't know where that confidence came from. Cause now I would have like wet my pants before I'd ever do anything like that. But so I learned guitar, wrote a song, brought it to him. We were playing it live by the next week. And then that never stopped. And we just started writing together and playing together. And it was going to be me like singing back up for Willie for a while, I guess. And then it just kind of...
You did that for a few Willie Heath shows. You
and then once we started the Waymores, it was like a song swap a lot of the time. It was... I like it when he sings more because my voice always burns out quicker. So like doing less work.
Like women need it one more.
Yes.
One more thing, but no. Like, it is actually male vocal cords are different than female vocal
cords. They are.
And so it's like, you know, I can't go out and drink and yell and my boyfriend can. Like it's just like
he's got such resonance in his voice, just that deep, like vibrating, you know. So he's just lucky as can be when it comes to natural ability. Mine just kind of creeps out on me every few days.
The first song, she wrote this song, and it was a banger. It was called We Had Nothing because it was my initials, W-H-N.
But I didn't tell her that. I didn't tell him that till like a year later.
I didn't know that.
So she would, and I was like, damn, that's a good song. And so then she was like, well, she didn't really know country music that well. And so, you know, she was just kind of singing blues-ish kind of stuff. And I said, you... want to stand out, you should try singing some country stuff because every woman in Atlanta is singing the same stuff because you want your voice to stand out.
You said it a lot meaner.
I was very nice. I said, you should try singing some, you know, try singing some Loretta stuff. And she would, and man, just nailed it. But she would come to me. She barely knew how to play three chords. She goes, I wrote this song. And I was like, damn, that's a good song. I didn't, you know. And then she would go, and I'd say, okay, we'll try to write a song just using two chords. And then she would do that. And then I'd give her a homework assignment. And she'd come back with a banger every time. And then I was like, try to write a waltz. And she would do that. She was just, these great. And I was in a rut. Like, I hadn't written a good song in like 2 or 3 years. And I was so mad. It was just because I have that kind of theory that you don't really write them. You're just kind of an antenna and you're out in the universe. And you just kind of receive them, you know.
Same.
And the life that you live conditioned your antenna to receive, you know.
Okay. You just summed up my whole songwriting religious philosophy.
My antenna had been broken like for a while. So Kira's coming to me with these songs that were like heavy and deep, you know, and like. I was like, oh my God, your antenna, you got Wi-Fi. I mean, you're like, you're got cable, you know, your antenna's good. And, but I would give her, you know, I was like, we'll try to write a song with just two chords in it. And she would come back with one. And I was like, damn, that's another good song. And finally, you know, she's like, oh, do you want to hear a song I wrote? I was like, no, I hadn't written a song in 2 years. I'm tired of hearing these great songs coming out of here. Just starting to write music, you know? So, she actually got me out of my writer slump. The first song we ever did together was a song of ours called Matches. Mm-hmm. And I had written this chorus like I mean, not lying, like 10 years ago. And I never found, I never wrote verses for it. I never, but I'd carried this chorus around with me forever. And she came in, I came to her one day. We weren't living together. I just came to her house and she goes, I wrote these verses, but I can't come up with a chorus. And she played the verses. And I was like, you know why? It's because I've been carrying the chorus around of that song for 10 years.
And your antenna was just pointing at her.
Yeah, my appointment was pointing.
It was attracting
that,
her.
We started writing together. And I'd never been able to write with anybody. When I lived in Nashville, you know, people were always like, we should have a writing session. I'm like, how does that even work? I don't know. I don't know how to do that.
It's hard for a lot of people.
You know, and how the songwriting process is with me is... was nothing like that. You know, I have to write from my experiences, and usually I can't write about shit in the moment. It's got to be. But man, Kira is like, boom, we were writing together, and it still goes that way. Like, songs just come out all the time. She's like, I've got a verse, but I got no chorus. What can you do? And I'll write a chorus or vice versa.
It's so much easier when you get to kind of split the work like that.
Yeah.
Because it's a struggle. Just writing in general is hard for us, for me. For some people, it's not, but so I'll come up with a chorus or a verse, and then like part of me just kind of wants to either let it sit for a little while or give up, which is usually the thing that I want to do. And Willie is always like, okay, then I'll pick it up from here. Like once you're done with it, what you want to give to it, I'm going to give the rest to it. And then we'll come in and like tweak each other's, you know, parts.
And sometimes, you know, it'll be like, hey, this is a good duet. It's like, I wrote the male perspective, you need to write the female's perspective. But now, you know, it's like what we got to do sometimes. If I come up with like, hey, here's a good concept, it's like, I can't tell Kira, because then it's like, are you gonna write the whole damn song before I even like, that ain't fair.
You gotta hold it in for
I
a
did
second.
The same. I hide a couple of them. Yeah,
so I just keep so a couple fun. Of them in the pocket. Like, don't you dare write this song, Dewey Cox. Don't you dare.
That is so fun. Are you writing a song about me right now? That is so fun. I love that. And I think there is a lot of pressure to co-write, and I write a lot by myself too, but Paul and I write really well together. But I feel that with you because a lot of times when I get out of a co-write that's been hard, or when a song starts to become hard, it's so easy for me to just, I'll come back to it. Because going through that, like trudging through the mud of getting a song right is so exhausting. Like songwriting to me, people think I just sit down and love to write songs. Like I actually haven't written in a while. Yeah. It's hard. It feels like
that's how people
work
write
to me.
Yeah, that's
people
how.
Write jingles, I'll not read, songs.
I will. We can write the hell out of some jingles, but that's about it. Like at a certain minute number seven, it's just kind of like, ugh.
Another
what
thing
are we
that
doing
happens
here?
With that is, you know, your antenna, you're receiving these songs, and like you start losing signal, and then so you'll try to force something, and it's like, oh, now it sounds contrived.
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell, and if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/BreeBagwell.
Howdy, y'all. It's Bree Bagwell, and I know y'all support the people who support me, so let me tell you about Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Born and raised in Deep Ellum, Texas, Deep Ellum Brewing Company has really made its mark on the beer world. Known for its flagships, Dallas Blonde and Deep Ellum IPA, they put boring beers to shame with a full lineup that's unapologetically not brewed to style. My personal favorite is the Dallas Blonde. It is so easy to drink. I just took it home for the holidays, and my whole family was like, obsessed with this beer. No joke. They drank it all. Thanks a lot, family. So head over to deepellumbrewing.com to open the beer vault and give your fridge what it deserves. And you'll see why love runs deep for Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Available in Texas and Oklahoma, side effects may include severe happiness. Deep Ellum Brewing Company products are for individuals 21 and older, and we encourage drinking responsibly.
Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct-to-garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo-related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Brie and Whiskey sent you.
That's the problem. I've written with a couple other people outside of Willie, and that's...
What?
There's...
Divorcing on this podcast.
This just in. Beep, 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 beep. But I always left sessions feeling like what I held close to with the song was kind of... shit on, you know, like that it was just kind of like not the 100%. Thing that I, it didn't turn out the way I wanted to, it didn't go the path that I was feeling when I was writing. So I never felt a writing session. I never left a writing session feeling like, oh, that was exactly what I thought, what I wanted. I always left feeling kind of, you know, turned down a little bit. And so when I write with Willie, it isn't that way either, because I'm a total brat with him and I can be because he's my husband and he signed on for it.
That happens so much, though.
The law says I have to like you.
The law says you have to like every song I write, too. Yeah.
There's your next song. The law says I have to like you.
That was in our vows.
Amazing. We got to write this song. The law says I have to. Legally, I have to love you.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I love it. Well, we should talk about The Knot because like the content of it is very, it has a very cool theme throughout, you know, and it's very like real. And but you got also lucky, not just with songwriting. I was gonna say this earlier, so I'm backtracking a little bit, but not lucky, but as a partnership and a duo with the writing, and that flows very nice. Like, but the way that your voice, the register of your voice, you guys can sing duets so easily because your voice is so low. Paul and I, it's harder for us to sing duets sometimes, you know. He can do way more rangy than me, but like it works so well together. Yeah. Like just the range you sing in.
My range was not always what it was until I started working with him, and his was so low, but mine was really low as well. Like true alto, I guess is what that would be. Yeah. But I had to push it so much to hit like higher registers when we would sing together that I ended up with vocal nodules twice.
Yeah.
Because I was just not doing proper techniques and just really pushing every night and trying. Our first few tours together, we didn't even have monitors. It was just mains. Yeah. Like we were just getting by with whatever we had. So I was really, really pushing my vocals and ended up having to get surgery twice for vocal nodules. And I was like, okay, we're going to reconfigure some things. But now it is a lot easier. I think my range did expand a little bit to fit his a little bit better.
And the same with mine. So here is our deal. You know, it's like with harmonies, we don't really sing harmonies. It's, you know, a lot of people say, oh, y'all have great harmonies. Like, we're not really singing harmonies. We're singing octaves. But that's okay in country music. I mean, George and Tammy did that all the time, you know. But what we've learned is to, like, it's more important to not step on each other's range. Right, you know, it's like I'll just try to stay low when she's going high, and it works for us, you know. It's believable, I think. And we were really, man, for a while. And one of our producers on our second, he was just on, y'all have to learn how to sing a proper harmony. What you're doing is great. And man, it ruined the joy of singing. I was in my head so much about it that I was scared to sing. And I was just finally, you know, then we had another friend, you know, it's just like, hey, man, what y'all are doing is great. It works. It's got character. It works. Don't listen to them.
I think it fits the content of the song.
I think
like,
so too.
It's like two people that are in it together with the real content. Like that, people have said things to me too that has gotten in my head or whatever, and that frustrates me because, like, that's what I hear when I listen to it. Like it just works, and I wouldn't question that. Yeah. I feel like it's something that, like, these two people are really married. They're really singing about real life stuff. Yeah. It's kind of sometimes like persnickety or whatever, you know? And it's about being on the highway and it's raw and real. And like the world that we live in right now with robots and AI, like
auto-tune.
I feel like you guys' music is so what people are craving, which is like real and raw and two real people.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. It is a Mose Wilson who, you know,
Produced The Knot,
and is just incredible human player all the way around. When we were doing this record, you know, we kept saying, hey, you know, if you show us the harmony, we can sing it, you know. And it's like, when are we going to do a harmony? And he's like, why? He's like, he just refused.
Stop trying to impress music snobs.
Quit trying to impress music
snobs. You're not going to. You're
never
going to
make them happy. He goes, you can sing a perfect harmony, and they're going to find something else to be upset about. He goes, quit. Just do this. It's what you do. It's what's got you this far. And I was like, You're right.
I do think, I will say, like, in our, you know, that what one thing we do is sing for the sake of the song. And I think that's, you know, along the lines of what you were saying, is it's not always time or place for harmony. And so many people will replace, they want technicality over the sake of the song. And we're just not capable. And we think what we do is okay.
It's believable.
And it's believable, yes.
It's so fun. And I feel a lot of pressure to sometimes, just because also Paul is so good at everything that I feel sometimes, or, you know, we go to festivals and stuff and people sing around and sing the most amazing harmonies.
Oh my God,
and
I know.
And it's, I think, it's, I forget, and you know, we forget sometimes, people really wish that they could write songs.
Have
a stage presence.
Or just be on stage. Yeah.
Or have the ability to stay out on the road for a long time is another thing. So it's like sometimes we feel in this world we have to have everything all the time, and that's just not true.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're right, too. In a world, I think what we do works now so well now in a world full of like AI cheats and all these other kind of things that I think, you know, the little imperfections make it, people know that it's real.
Yeah,
you
for
know
sure.
What I mean?
For sure.
And other things that we do as well, you know, it's like our guitar tones. I play this like 1980s model Fender Malibu that I love it. It sounds thin, but it's, you know, I have a deep voice. I want a thinner sounding guitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her guitar sounds, she's got a jumbo. Her tone's a little deeper because her voice is a little higher. It's like those little sonic things that people don't notice, we notice, and it keeps that stuff from sounding like mud.
And we usually do our best to do octave guitars,
you know,
with what we're playing, like finger positioning and capo positioning and stuff. We try to not just mud it up with the same chords on two different guitars.
Yeah.
You know, we try our best to put a lot of little things in there so that you can't, you know,
and
it doesn't feel
knowing,
like mud.
It's knowing what you have in your toolbox, right? I know what I can and what I can't sing, and she's the same. Of course, Kira's got just a voice that, I mean, she got an amazing voice. She's a much better vocalist than me, but I know what I can and what I can't do, and I just stay in my lane, you know, and I don't, there's a lot of people that sing, you know, that don't know that trick. They, it's like we'll see people sing that have like a really good voice, but they do it all of the time and they take the charm out of it. It's like, you know, you don't got to sing that hard all of the time.
I'm exhausted just listening to you.
Exactly.
Willie calls it urban yodeling.
I call it urban
That's
yodeling.
That's amazing.
Yeah. When What Changed My Life, we recorded with Shel Taomi on our album before this. I don't know if you don't know, people listening don't know who Shel Taomi is. He's a He's an American producer that went to England. He was part of the British invasion. He discovered the Kinks and the Who. And, you know, he's David Bowie's one of his first managers. And he just passed away last year.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
but,
no.
But he never made a country record. And he heard our second album when it came out and wanted to record it. He loved our voices. And so the next thing we know, that album's out. And next thing we know, we're going to L.A. to make this record with Shel Taomi. But we're in the studio working. We did it all live. And Kira, I played along with the band, led the band kind of. And Kira sang everything. And I went back and sang my parts after it was all done. Mm-hmm. But I'm working up a song with the band. And Shel was blind. And he would just sit in a little chair. And I'm working up the song with the band. And I'm just kind of singing like this, you know, at this volume. And he pulls me down. And he said, Willie, he goes, that's how you need to sing. He goes, quit trying so hard. He goes, sing in your speaking voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it changed. It's like, why didn't somebody tell me this 10 damn years ago?
Yeah.
You know, it just changed how I thought about it. It changed everything about it.
Yeah.
It's like now, you know, now I enjoy it as we're always, man. I always had a complex about it, you know, hitting notes or hitting low, you know, but that changed everything for me. You know, he was like, just
it's weird
sing.
Because he told me how much he loved my voice, but then he was so mean to me in the studio and was pushing me nonstop. Well, he was such a sweet man. Then you got into the vocal booth and he was like, no, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Do it this way. And I was like, I hated it. But
well, the right producer makes vocals hard.
And there was an absolute reason he did what he did. He got the best takes out of me, the best vocal out of me. But in the moment, I was like, you were so nice to
me.
Well,
he was so hard on you, you know, because he said that she had one of the best female voices he'd ever heard. You know, so that's why he's
awesome.
Like, I'm going to make sure I get the best vocal performance out of you that I can. But
that's
just
tears.
Little things like that that you learn to, you know, use. I hear a lot of people singing that are still trying to figure out, you know, exactly what their you know, their tool is.
And that's okay. I mean, I think early on I listen to my voice and I'll cringe at some songs, but you're still finding your voice.
Yes.
And I remember there's one song in particular I recorded where I have a really heavy accent. And my producer, she's like, you don't talk, you don't speak with an accent. Why are you singing with an accent? Well, all of my heroes kind of sang with an accent.
Yeah.
Or whenever I like loved the new Miranda record or whatever it was, I was starting to kind of sing. Or I came to Texas and I was like, bear pressure. Like, I don't talk like that.
Yeah.
And so now I think about that often. That's funny. We've had kind of the same advice when it comes to that, because that is really good advice to kind of sing in your speaking voice instead of trying to change.
Willie always, like, we'll leave, you know, we'll go see a buddy or somebody play in our hometown or something, and we'll leave, and he'll say, that is not how they talk.
They don't sound like that.
Why are they putting it on so thick when they're singing if that's not how they talk?
I don't hear their singing voice in their speaking voice.
Yeah, that's a big problem for him. I don't really care so much. If I have been, like, drinking, you're going to hear an accent regardless.
Me too, like, girl.
Like, that tequila gets in me, and oh, my Lord. So I'll say, it doesn't matter if I'm speaking or singing, that accent's coming out the minute tequila comes out.
Me too, that's so funny. And I actually did drink a little bit before I did that track, and I think because it was about beer, and it was supposed to be, I wasn't singing it fun enough, and I wonder if that's what happened.
I used to drink all the time in the studio, like, it was just part of being in the studio, because I...
Right.
Was nervous and just hated the experience. But now I don't, like with Moe's, I wasn't drinking for the knot. And with Shell Tell Me, I was, because it was Shell Tell Me. And I was so scared.
Our morning started, that session started, we had to have our dog put down.
Her dog died that morning.
We were in California. And so
on FaceTime, we had to watch our dog. Like,
he's got it, took him to the, so we were on FaceTime. We put our dog down. Good boy.
This is the saddest OnlyFans podcast.
Yeah, I know. And we were like,
ever.
Oh my God. But that's how, that's how you make a good country record.
Yeah,
put your dog down before you go in there.
So we watched our dog die, and then I just filled like a Yeti with tequila and was like, let's go. We got to go to work.
Well, and so going on tour, like, you guys are going down Houston to Tulsa and then back. This will be out by then, but then back to Driftwood, and like, oh my gosh, you are really, really doing it.
It's probably the dumbest routing we've ever had. We normally route a lot better, but you know how it is. Sometimes you just have to take what we'll book, and it's, you know, it's not our favorite. This time we're going to have to leave out after the Houston show. Then we go play an hour in Tulsa and drive out like 3 hours after Tulsa. And then we have like two solid 3 hour shows in Driftwood and Aransas. But then, like I said, we have so many days off after that before our next show that it's just kind of like, put the work in while you're there, bust your ass, and then go relax somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's
and Dallas, I forgot.
Well, you know, it gets harder and harder. So many venues, you know, so many venues are just going away for people at our level, you know, and it's getting hard. God bless the house concert series, you know, those.
Oh, yeah.
Those are really, I look forward to more of those popping up. There's some ones that we do that are full-on stops on a tour.
I saw you have one in Arizona or something.
We do. Desert Valley House Concert is, man, they've their whole backyard, they've Apache dedicated. Junction. They've got, like, seats lined up, like a little theater.
A little theater built in their
stage.
Backyard.
Her, like, boyfriend runs sound for you while you're there, and it's a nice system.
They house you right
they
there.
They feed you.
You know,
right.
There's a few of those little stops along the way, you know, and... you know, it's great because it's, you know, lots of venues are disappearing, man. If you know, unless you're at a Charlie Crockett level or something, you know, where you're playing big theaters. And
or if you're not doing it all the way across the country. If you're, I mean, Texas is so great because you can play six nights a week and never have to leave Texas. It's
dance
incredible.
Halls, you know?
And those dance hall gigs are so much fun. But if you're doing it all the way across the country, there are some places that want duo only, some places that want full band only. You know, it's just getting harder and harder to get the caliber of shows versus the quantity of shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
and we talk about that a lot. It's kind of the, you know, the 3 hour in the corner gig or the and the arena.
Yeah.
And how the middle is, even if you're a middle artist, it's like, what do you do next? How do you go from 3 hour gig to arena without all these venues? And if they're all disappearing, hopefully the Ticketmaster win or whatever. Did you see all that?
I did see that recently.
Crazy.
That's crazy.
I know.
What happened? What am I missing out on?
There's been like so much hoopla about, I don't remember if someone came out and so their texts like between some of the owners or the people that run it, and they were like, we're going to rip them off.
We're robbing them blind.
Yeah. They came out just like, okay. They were trash talking, the people that make them their money.
But it is hard. I mean, it's not $10 at the door anymore. It's $24 for a ticket plus $6 for a fee plus, you know, online.
And then
the drinks are expensive. And then, you know, if you're Ubering or whatever, it's like, even if you're going to just your regular honky tonk, it's a big night out. It's an investment for people.
One of the things I do love about, you know, well, first off, Texas, she was saying, it's always great. But, you know, like some of our heroes that we have, you know, it's a very realistic and obtainable goal how they live, you know. And it's like, I love, like, you know, Dale Watson's one of our mentors and heroes. It's like, this guy will play these tour and do these big theater things, you know, here and there. But then, you know, you'll see him. He's just playing some little shithole honky-tonk in the corner for same pay that we would do it for,
and it's
you know. And it's great. I love that, you know, not too proud to do that. You know, yes. It's like, I'll still play a honky tonk and then I'll go on tour and play these theaters.
Right.
You know, I love that. And sometimes, man, even when we do like theaters, I love it. But man, I like a good dance hall.
Man, those like 90-minute sets to 2 hours, that is like my favorite thing in the world, especially if they're like a nice listening room theater gig. That's my favorite thing ever. Yeah. It's that third hour that I always just end up like, ugh. Why are we here? And I love it, especially,
like, yeah. Time is crawling.
I looked at it.
It's been 8 minutes in the third hour.
We used to do that at the White Horse. Whenever we play there, we'd put our little timer down on the forehand. I was like, I have to stop doing it. It gives me just nothing but anxiety. Because you feel like, you know, man, we've been going. I'm sure we probably got, 30 minutes left? And I'll look down and it's been 20 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
That's good. That one's like an hour and... I can't remember. Hour 45?
Like hour 45. I stopped early on accident at the White Horse because we do a 90-minute set.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't yell at me.
Okay, good.
I think my tour manager might have got the brunt of it. Ooh. But we're playing there soon. Yeah. I love that.
Good. Yeah, JD is so wonderful.
I mean, in his defense, the set time, I was wrong.
For sure.
But we're just so used to playing.
That's one of our favorite spots to play.
It was like 105 minutes.
Yeah.
And then And we didn't have our talkback mic because we rolled like no trailer, rolled in, you have all the stuff there. So I did stop a little bit early. Sorry, White Horse. I'm coming back.
Funny when you go, so that thing of, because, you know, you play these songs, you know, you play these shows where you tell stories about the songs and do stuff, man. It's like some of these dance halls, especially like the White Horse, is like, we do not care. We want to dance.
They want to dance.
Song. I don't care about
your
stories.
We're going to come on stage and cut you both.
That's what made me realize, our set is running out fast because there's no jaw jacking in between. Yeah. But they two-step like it's a sport.
They do. Yeah. And they're really good at it. And
they're so good.
That's like the one place where Paul and I kind of have a unspoken rule. Maybe it's just me that knows about this rule, but I just never dance with anybody else when I'm on the road. Yeah. I just think it's odd.
Yeah.
And so I turn people, but except at the White Horse, because they are there. They are professionals.
Oh,
yeah. He's like, go dance. I don't care.
I don't think I'd do it if I were on the road by myself. I don't think I would go dance with someone else.
But if he's
there. But Willie also doesn't dance. And he'd be like, can you dance with my wife?
Yeah.
Like, just to get out of having to do it.
I'm not very good at it.
We need to take some two-step lessons at the White Horse or somewhere.
I would rather be making you two-step than two-step.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you'll go, you know, from that. And then, you know, you play the honky-tonks or whatever. And then you go to a listening room where it's like there isn't a sound being made.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, oh,
it's
this
a little nerve-wracking,
takes a minute
but I love
to wrap
it.
Your head around it.
I love it.
It's a different, we're always switching gears. I was going to ask you how, we're playing a show with Del Watson coming up. I'm really excited.
Love him.
He's the best. I was going to ask how you met him. And because I've seen him all over your stuff. He's on one of your songs.
He's so wonderful.
Well, I know Dale from my solo career, right? I had done some dates with Dale when I was a younger fella. When Dale still had dark hair. It was so, wound up doing a show with him in Atlanta as the Waymores years later. I probably hadn't seen Dale in 15 years, you know, when we were in Atlanta. And we were opening a show for him with the full band. And it was a place called Smith's Old Bar. And I was in the green room right behind the stage. But I thought, the path to get off of stage to come to the green room was cluttered with stuff. So I thought for sure, I knew Dale was about done. He would come down and go that way because it was. But so I'm sitting back there and the band's wrapping it up. And here comes Dale climbing over all the stuff to get. So he comes back there and he was already a fan of the Waymores, but didn't know that it was me.
You. Yeah.
And I said, hey, Dale, I don't know if you remember me, but, Willie Heath Neal. And he goes, Little Willie? And I was like, well, first, I've always been taller than you, Dale. But, Little Willie. He goes, oh, my God. And, man, he did not let me leave his side all night. He was just like, oh, my God, it's so good to see you. I wonder what you've been up to. He goes, that's you. And he goes, I knew you sounded familiar. And that was it. And he just stayed in touch with us after that. He would not let us leave his side.
I was downstairs collecting money.
She was downstairs
money.
Getting her pay, and he's like, come with me. I was like, well, Kira's going to be real mad, because Kira had never really...
I'd never met him. I met him once, like, at a show. I snuck backstage, and Willie was on tour, and so I went with his friend David. And I snuck backstage and was like, hey, Dale, I'm Willie's girlfriend. And he was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
In his Dale fashion. But that was 100 years ago. And so when I came upstairs... at Cecil Bar, Willie was like, you have to come meet Dale. He's been asking about you.
He pictures all night. Yeah. He, like when he's signing autographs, he goes, no, don't stay. He's like, we're going to go, no, stay, stay. Let's catch up. It was so great. And then when we were putting together our second album, we had always thought it would be a great, that the song, his song Caught, would made a great.
I love that song.
We thought it'd be, it's like this song, we always thought this song was meant to be a duet from the man and woman's perspective, because it's about a man and a woman getting caught, you know, and so we asked him if he would play guitar on it.
First, we asked for his permission to cover it.
Yeah, it says, you're all right with us. You know, we'd love to do this. He thought it was a great idea. And then we asked him if he would play guitar on it. And he did. And he, you know, brought us into the Maripolitan thing, which we got nominated, which changed a lot for us.
Yeah.
It's like shows got easier to get even once we got the nomination. But Dale's always been just a mentor and a great guy. He's just a sweetheart of a fella. He always gets us up on stage when he sees us. You know, he's just a great, great guy and a great mentor. And the real, you learn, going to see Dale is honky tonk high school. I mean, our banter and all this stuff, you know, the humor is like, man, we learned all of that from watching Dale work.
And it's so funny. It's so crazy. Just, I've always been a fan of Texas music and stuff. And now, you know, being able to call someone like that a friend, it's so lovely about Texas music is because most everybody is like that, and if they're not, it's really rare because people are so nice.
Yeah, there's not a whole, I mean, you're gonna find ego because it's in the music industry, but there's not a whole lot of that in this camp, like the Ameripolitan team and just the, you know, this part of the Texas team. There's not a lot of ego that you're gonna find. And beyond Dale, once we got in close with he and Celine,
Celine's also a sweetheart.
We met Manny Pagan, his drummer, through the, and Manny houses us every time we come to Texas. He and his wife, Roxy, like, they are genuine, like, family at this point. They just
Dale always will ask us if, are y'all staying, if he sees us or knows me in town, he goes, you know, he's like, are y'all staying with Manny? You got a place to stay? Because, you know, I got an apartment. You can stay. You know, he's always just looking out for
that
us.
That whole team just makes sure that we're taken care of every time that we're here or in Memphis.
Or we, because we do Hernando's.
And, they're just great people.
Oh,
yeah.
No, I have not.
Oh,
I need to do that.
I'm going to call Celine immediately.
Let's go. Well, I mean, you know, we kind of got where we were playing mostly in Texas, and so now I am getting outside of Texas, which has been, I did 16 states last year, I think, and 12 that, so I'm awesome. I'm expanding, but you know, I love what you all do, and you guys got to go overseas. I mean, we haven't done that since before COVID, and so the dream is to be able to do this all over the country, but sometimes it's harder to leave Texas when you're you know, we're this is where I make all my money.
I don't know if we were Texas based, I don't know that we would tour as like in such a range as we do now. I don't know that we would, because there's not a lot of reason to leave Texas. It's so wonderful here.
Every time we go out, people love Texas music. It's crazy. Yeah. Like, I just played in Wisconsin. People were coming in Ohio and they'll drive 2 hours because they follow the scene.
Mm. Yeah.
But I'm so proud that you guys are doing a bunch of shows here, and then you go New Mexico and
Arizona, California.
And that's so what we do, doing it as, you know, we do a lot as the duo, and we have that luxury of, like, we have a Nashville band that we use, a California band that we use, a Texas band that we use mostly. But, you know, we have that luxury of coming in, doing it with a band in this area, and then leaving them and doing it as a duo. Financially, it's smarter, you know, and we
not
enjoy,
less overhead.
You know, we enjoy, we don't have to have a band with us all of the time, you know, and it, but I know several guys that, you know, I'm always like, man, you guys should tour outside of Texas. And they're like, why?
Yeah.
You know, it's like the guarantee money cuts in half as soon as I leave Texas, you know?
Yeah.
So I get it. There's a lot of guys that just live on that dance hall circuit, but, yeah, I don't know, man. Like we were saying earlier, music is a means to see the world.
For, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like...
And with your person.
And yes, absolutely. And California wouldn't... I couldn't get an email back from California for the longest time until...
The whole state?
We got the entire state of California.
Really? No one
I emailed the governor, everything.
Dear California.
Dear California.
Maybe that's why they weren't emailing back.
Yeah. Gotta be more
California.
Specific.
Love Georgia. Yeah. But after Ameripolitan, after we got that nomination, we met some folks there,
some promoters,
and within like 20 minutes, we had 5 dates booked.
We had five shows in 4 days.
Yeah,
booked, and it's like we were coming out that way. We've got family out there too, so that makes it easy for us to have a place to land.
We don't have to afford hotels.
We don't have to get hotels and stuff. But we've got, now we do pretty good. We've got a good little following in California, and we go there couple times a year. We tour Texas more than we tour anywhere else, but because Texas is just still good like that, you know.
Good to
but,
us, yeah.
We got a good little thing in California now, and we're out there. We had one promoter say to us, we told him, hey, we're going to be back in like 3 months. He's like, you were just out here. Why are you coming back? It's like, because there's demand for it.
Yeah.
You know, because people, we can.
Because we can, you know.
My daddy's out here.
Oh,
we
also that.
Stay.
I'm so happy. Well, we have listeners of this podcast all over the country and even the world. So please check out The Way Moores, and you won't be disappointed. I've been just loving getting to dive into your music. And
Thank you.
Just a very raw, real sound, great songwriting. And sometimes I say raw and real, like I mean that in like
the obvious best way.
Like, yeah, you're not going to get any. I got sent 10 Suno songs this week from people pitching me robot songs. And so when I was listening to y'all, I was like, I felt myself just take like a deep exhale. I was like,
music
is still, and live music is still, you know, you're still bringing it to the people. So I commend you for that.
Thank you very much.
We've been forwarded a lot of reviews and people talking about this record is that real country still, you know, it's like, are there people that we played, this kid's little country band was playing the same venue as us not long ago, and they're like, I thought we were country until we saw we're not country at all.
They have time
but and I love it because it's not, we just make music and it comes out country.
You're saying true to yourself, and that's what we're proponents of on this podcast. And so we'll let y'all get back on the road. And
Thank
I'm so glad to meet my new friends.
Thanks for having us.
And we need to hang out more next time you come
to
Palm
Falls. Sure.
Definitely.
Maybe
on
we
your stop.
Tag team some shows together.
Yeah,
that would
sure.
be awesome.
For sure.
Okay.
Yep.
We'll see you in Atlanta.
Thank you.
Dear Atlanta. Dear California.
Dear California.
Dear Georgia.
Adios.
Without you, I just ain't no good. I just ain't.